I believe by dint now in the third week of my really active campaigning that I can break through and convince the people of the state that they've got everything they want right here in me and that I can deliver. And that all the talk about my health and my infirmity and whatnot is so much nonsense. Here I am, debating, campaigning, moving about as active as either of my opponents.
Yet that theme that you have pursued for over 2 weeks now has not caught on, as you have admitted. If it stays like this, can you rule out at this point that conceding before November 4th?
I certainly rule it out at this point. I rule out what you say. In other words, I am not prepared to give up on my electorate. I said when I said that I would run, that I would leave it to the people to make the decision. And I ain't mad at nobody. And I repeat that. I'm not. And I won't be. But I felt that considering the asset the people had built up, a quarter of a century of seniority and power, that it seemed inconceivable to me that for the alternatives, and I'm not disrespectful, it's a campaign. You got to call a spade a spade. For the alternatives which are presented of a complete lack of experience in the federal government and starting as a complete freshman, a novice, which Mr. D'Amato would have to do, and coming out of the House with a record with Ms. Holtzman does of a strange lapse in terms of the security of our nation, it just seems to me that in the interests of the people, it's my duty to press that choice. Why not? I think that's what the people ought to ask themselves. Now they've been hearing all the same stuff. There's nothing new anymore. Why not?
Let me ask Ms. Holtzman a question, and maybe you can respond to the strange lapse while you're at it. Do you think that the United States is in greater danger today and in greater danger or closer to a confrontation with the Soviet Union than it has been since the Vietnam War?
Well, I think these are very troubled times. I think the invasion by the Soviet Union of Afghanistan is extremely disturbing and troublesome. But I also see some signs that the Soviet Union may not be quite as almighty as we thought. Look at what's happening in Poland, how a group of people who used nothing more than their devout belief in human freedom and the right of working people to organize for their own benefits had the courage to stand up to one of the mightiest military powers in the world and to their own government. And look at what courage and conviction and will and determination has brought about. And the interesting thing is that they have made tremendous inroads. And this, I think, will cause a rumble and a turbulence throughout the Eastern Europe. And it will create a force that is going to be difficult to contain. But obviously, the United States has to have a military capacity that can protect our interests abroad, and we have to have a military capacity that can protect our interests here at home. At the same time, we cannot have a government military that's wasteful. And one of the interesting things is that the American people believe, I think there was a recent Gallup poll that showed that the American people believe, 70% of them, that the major problem with the military is not that there's not enough spending, but that much of the money is misallocated and wasted. And I think we've seen that, and I've seen that. I've been on the House Budget Committee now for 5 years. I've seen the fact that hundreds of millions of dollars of the military monies are spent on making movies for the Pentagon. Well, the Pentagon's not Hollywood yet. Travel by civilians, not military officials to inspect bases, but civilians. Competitive bidding by the military. 90% of procurement is done without competitive bidding, and those laws that create the loopholes haven't been examined for 25 years. We can't afford to have waste in the military for several reasons. One is that waste in the military does not make us stronger, and in fact it gives us a dangerous illusion of strength. And secondly, as a member of the House Budget Committee, I know exactly how that waste is financed. We voted for, and I opposed it, a $20 billion increase in the military, and the reason I opposed it was that the way that was financed was cutting out New York's money that New York State and city get for crime fighting. The federal government has now proposed to wipe out all aid to crime fighting in order to finance an increase in the military budget. They've proposed to cut out entirely the state share of revenue sharing, which gets passed on to schools and helps to finance schools in New York State. They proposed cutting out all aid to hard-pressed cities on unemployment, like New York and Yonkers and Buffalo. They've called for cutbacks in aid to education and nutrition and the like. I think that those kinds of trade-offs are dangerous, and I think that we need people who are tough enough to stand up and say no to those kinds of trade-offs. I think people here are deeply concerned about crime as well as a strong defense. They're deeply concerned about decent schools as well as a strong defense. And I think we can have both if we have people who are prepared to stand up to the waste in
given
the
military budget
and
elsewhere. Given the turmoil in Afghanistan and the Middle East right now, do you think you're more likely to vote for defense appropriations? And given the conceding the waste you talk about, more likely to vote for defense appropriations as a senator in the next few years than you have been in the past? Or do you think you would be just as skeptical as you were in the last 6 or 8 years?
Well, I'm going to be hard-pressed to vote for an MX missile system, which could cost $60 billion to $100 billion to transport missiles in this enormous racetrack system around Utah and Nevada when we can't get money to run subways around New York City.
How about the defense appropriations bills themselves?
But that's what happens in the defense appropriations bills. That's where the financing comes
from. So you will still
take
the tact that if you oppose an MX missile system, then you would
vote
against the whole appropriation bill.
I might vote against that because I think that we need to have people who are going to stand up and say, we need a strong defense, we cannot afford waste, we also have some very important needs here in the United States, such as research on energy, by the way, which was cut back also to help finance this increase in the wasteful increases in the military budget. So
yes.
I think these are things that have to be very
So with all the criticism
that
you've taken on this issue in the justified or not, I'm not saying it's justified, primary and election, you're sticking to your position on defense
appropriations. Well, I think actually that the public agrees with me. I think the Gallup poll is very interesting, that 70% of Americans believe that the major problem with the military is not that they don't have enough money, but that they don't spend it right. And look at what happens. We're spending $70 billion more than we were at the end of the Vietnam War, and we send 8 helicopters to Iran, and 3 of them don't work.
Could you see us, maybe I'll rephrase it slightly. Can you see us starting on a new era of increased defense appropriation?
Let me say that when someone says they're for a strong defense and votes repeatedly against any defense appropriation bill, then it's just not being accurate with the facts. And that's what the Congresswoman has been doing. How can you be for a strong defense when you vote against not MX missile systems with race cars? No one's here. I don't think the senator has advocated that, nor do I. But vote against any missile system. How can you say you're for a strong defense and let our boys fly antiquated planes, which are older than they are themselves? And let's be more specific. If we talk about a strong defense, how is it wasteful to encourage decent pay standards to keep technical people like pilots, to keep nuclear engineers in, to keep doctors in, to give bonuses in? Do you know we have tens of thousands of young men and their wives and their families and dependents who have to rely on food stamps? And Ms. Holtzman has repeatedly voted repeatedly voted against making available those kinds of pay increases. Now, that is not being fair and honest with the people to say that I vote against waste when I vote against munitions, when I vote against tanks, weapon systems, not exotic systems, transportation systems, and that's what the Holtzman record has been. And I don't believe that that represents a fair balance, nor is it fair to this country.
How would you make it fair?
I think, for example, to have a strategic air defense, a retaliatory factor, which is built upon an antiquated plane, the B-52, which is older in many cases, and the pilots to fly it, and both my opponents share the basis that there has to be no change in that. That's wrong. I would have voted for a new plane to take the place of the B-1 bomber, which is not a turkey, and which is not vulnerable to the missiles, which we now have a B-52, which is vulnerable to. I don't believe we're being fair to the young men who we call forward to defend this nation and inadequately supply them, inadequately pay them, and give them less than what is the best.
Let me ask you about the MX. The heart of that system, as proposed by President Carter and supported by your candidate, Ronald Reagan, is that we do have this racetrack, which we race the missiles around so they're supposedly not vulnerable to enemy attack.
So Frank,
how can you have one with the other? Frank, you want the MX missiles, but you want to let them stay
where
they
are? We need a new missile system that is delivery capabilities unquestioned, and right now we have Titan IIs, they're liquid fuel, they're blowing up in silos, and I think that we have to recognize that, one, we have to have a missile that we can depend on. Now, secondly, I believe that by making this kind of judgment, I show very clearly that I'm not prepared to open up a blank checkbook and give $60 billion to a race car system. I said that long before I was on this program. I indicated that that kind of expenditure goes beyond what I think is called for and is reasonable and prudent. It is not reasonable and prudent.
Let us at this point
say what I would do.
Yes, Senator, if you'll give us just a couple of minutes to take a break for a commercial message, and we'll be back when newsmakers. Senator Javits, I believe the question was, are we beginning an era of a new arms race?
And how are we going to balance out the defense expenditure? I offered a budget in the Senate, which was defeated, but the defense figure survived and is the figure that the Congress has adopted, $153.7 billion for 1981. And that loosened up several billion dollars for the other programs, urban mass transit and various other programs, which greatly interest New York. And it could be done. The difficulty in the House was that they went for a very much higher figure in the $160 billion. And so it couldn't be balanced out. Secondly, we have got to, in my judgment, expand the base of American business in addition to cutting out waste. And I, too, have voted for a $13 billion cut because there are many things we cannot afford. We can't shut our eyes to that. But in addition to that, you've got to, in my judgment, work very hard to bring business into taking over many of these responsibilities, like youth training and unemployment, and also, by the thing I said a little while ago, making possible an expansion of business and an expansion of jobs, expanding the tax base, certainly as far as business is concerned and as far as good earners are concerned. In that way, is the only real way in which you can keep a balance. And finally, you've got to have a very cool head and a very sharp eye for where you can cut in defense. And Ms. Holtzman, I must say, still covers this all up with waste. Well, you're dealing with $153 billion. There's a lot of waste, but it isn't all that much as to make the difference, so you can vote no. You can vote no on the particular items in which there is waste. But in the final analysis, you've got to provide for the defense of the United States. Now, what I've just described, it seems to me, is a proper policy, balanced, moderate, considerate of the needs of America and of the needs of the security of our country.
Let me change the subject at this point with perhaps about 8 or 9 minutes left in this program. Mr. D'Amato, there have been stories, several of them, that raise questions about your integrity. Do you feel that you have been unfairly singled out in this matter? Do you feel that all the stories about raising questions about your integrity are so much hogwash?
I think that looking at the source, looking at the fact that we've disclosed, that we've answered the questions carefully, they speak for themselves. When someone would indicate, for example, that by way of a report, a grand jury report that reflected on other elected officials, and indeed those elected officials were powerless to invest monies at that time until the comptroller just recently, April 18th, came down with a new opinion, to have someone who was an attorney, a graduate of law school, Harvard Law School, attempt to smear me with that certainly kind of takes the direction away from the main thrust. The main thrust of this campaign is, where is this nation going? How are we going to make it strong and viable? How are we going to get our economy going again? It was a very deliberate attempt, I might say, by some people to take the thrust away from the real issues. And let me take this opportunity, if I might. When I hear about wanting a strong American, and we look at a defense vote, and we see it absolutely alien to the kinds of things necessary for a strong America, I think the public is entitled to some detailed, reasonable explanation. And by the way, if anyone has any facts in terms of any improprieties, put them forth. To date, There have been none.
Well, let's go back.
Secondly.
Let's stay on this subject just for a moment, because on Friday, at the request of various people, you directed that your grand jury testimony of 5 years ago be released.
Where I was a witness.
Where you were a witness.
Right.
You were not a target. You were a witness before a federal grand jury looking into the 1% give back or kickback of...
Contribution
of... Nassau County employees giving back 1% of their pay to the party for various kinds of considerations. In that testimony, you were quoted as saying that you made such payments yourself and you knew of others making payments, and the exact quote was, you did it because you were on a team. You wanted to be a team player. I always mailed mine in. Is that a justification for engaging in something
if you look at the total record, Tony, I indicated right from the beginning that no one had ever coerced me, no one had ever demanded of me, that initially when I started my employment, I gave much less because I didn't have the financial wherewithal, nor did I ever countenance any kind of coercion, nor would I participate. And I think if you look at the record, the attorney, the assistant U.S. attorney, says, Mr. D'Amato, on page 3, you're not a target. And quite frankly, today, you have never even had any incriminating things come up with regard to yourself. They wanted me to explain, and I did as a witness. And I put this fully forth. And let me say to you, though, I think that the main thrust of this campaign is the fact that I have two opponents who've been in office for a decade at least, and who have contributed to the building of a system that rewards people for no work, penalizes taxpayers and workers, has given us less than an adequate defense, and one who doesn't care about selling someone else's reputation, who hides upon these gross things of saying I'm against waste in the military, who talks about energy independence, and I think the people should know this in the state of New York, who would vote and deprive them against tax credits for fuel conservation measures. Anyone who's ever gotten $1 back for putting new storm windows, new weatherization, would have been deprived of that. Mrs. Holtzman would have deprived the taxpayers of New York, and she talks about energy independence, of tens of millions, indeed hundreds of millions of dollars that they've been able to get back by way of tax credits because she has voted repeatedly going back to 1975 against giving people the ability to do for themselves. I think it's a philosophy.
I'd like to give Ms. Holtzman a chance to answer that in a minute, but I have one more question on this, and I think it's the fundamental question, at least I hope it's the fundamental question. I wonder if it comes down to this, Mr. D'Amato. You are in a rather important position in Nassau County, presiding supervisor of the town of Hempstead, the largest town in Nassau County. It is the position that enables you to make this important race, the reason you are here today. Does it come down to the fact that you are in that position, and you are in this race at least partly because of the fact that you played ball in an unethical system? The end justifies
May
the
I
means.
Answer that question?
Yes.
In no case, at any place or any time, that I engage in any practice that I don't have to hold or I can't hold my head up high. As a matter of fact, if you refer to Newsday, which is the newspaper out there, and comments, it says in most cases, the various practices that have been brought up were corrected by none other than Al D'Amato. I put my county into a self-insurance...
But for years, you participated and gave the money and never said anything.
I gave a willful donation of my own volition. And are we suggesting that there's something wrong with the political process that allows that? I don't think so. And
we're suggesting there's something wrong with a political process that appears to require that if someone's going to get promoted.
It would be wrong. I have never, under any circumstances, engaged in any practice that I was less than honorable with in terms of making my own contributions. I did them freely. I've never asked anyone to make a contribution. And so consequently, I believe that the record... A record that goes back for many years, that has never involved me in any unethical conduct, speaks for itself.
Maybe we'll move on to another subject. I have to remind you that we have less than 3 minutes to go.
Do you think it's possible for me to respond to the statement that was made about my voting record? With respect to the issue of tax credits, here we go with a very good example of why a senator has to look past the title of a bill. Because this was a bill that would have deregulated the price of natural gas. And I don't believe in deregulating the price of natural gas. As a result of that, natural gas prices have escalated. In fact, Brooklyn Union Gas Company just raised its rates by 31%. And I don't believe that people of this country ought to be forced to pay these incredible additional prices by deregulating and decontrolling the price of American oil and American gas. But I also want to make a point about the issue of integrity. We have had a great tradition of senators from the state of New York, people of independence, people of stature, people about whom questions of integrity were not raised. And I think that it's very important that we have people who measure up to that. And I think that with respect to the issue of the 1% kickback, that's been going on in Nassau County for a long time. Mr. D'Amato, in his grand jury testimony, even admitted that he heard people complain about the fact that they didn't want to have to pay that kickback. Who's paying the price for the massive corruption that's been going on in Nassau County? The taxpayers. They pay the highest property rates in the country.
So you don't think Mr. D'Amato is a man of integrity?
I don't think Mr. D'Amato, in terms of his own writing the letter in connection with the 1% scheme, in connection with his silence in the face of constant reports by public agencies, including a grand jury, really measures up to the great tradition that we've had of senators.
Senator, do you think that integrity is a valid issue in this campaign?
I think integrity is a very valid issue, and I'm deeply concerned that the circumstances respecting Nassau and this 1% business, especially the reconfirmation of it so recently in a letter which never surfaced until a short time ago, showing Mr. D'Amato's contact with him, certainly creates an aura which should not be the aura of a United States senator, with all respect, if he proposes to succeed me. With all respect.
Do you think he is a man of integrity?
I do not wish ever to say that about any man. I think the public must judge upon the facts, and I've given the facts as I see them, and my reason for feeling, therefore, that Mr. D'Amato should not be the United States Senator from New York. I think that answers you.
And I might conclude, I think these really rather desperate charges to try to swing people away from the real issues.
Thank you. Sorry, but our time on this special edition of Newsmakers is up, and our thanks to the candidates for their cooperation in this.
Okay. I just have a brief comment to make, and then I'm sure the senator does also, and then we'll take any questions that you have. I would appreciate it if you'd limit the questions to this particular matter, and then if you want me to hang around subsequently on other matters, I'm happy to do that. As you know, I have, at the request of other people who are running for office, one case it was Governor Reagan, another case it was Al D'Amato, who asked for briefings on the city, and I was happy to respond to their request. The senator does not have to be briefed on the city. What we did was to discuss pending legislation which is currently in the Congress, some of it authored by him and sponsored by him, others offered by others, but in which obviously he wants to protect the city's interest. And we went over some of those items of legislation because in all probability the Congress will come back after the election for about maybe 30 days to enact some of the pressing legislation. So some of the matters that we discussed, and then I'll ask the senator to comment, were what would be our priorities. The senator asked me what did we want as a priority as it related to the city, and we told him, Jim Brigham, myself, Bob Wagner, others who were there, that our priority, if there was one thing that we wanted, and there were lots of things that we wanted, would be the Moynihan Medicaid legislation, because Medicaid's breaking our back, and you've heard that from me before, so that's our number one priority. Then, of course, we are interested in the general revenue sharing legislation, which is there. We want the state to be included, because there is a flow-through as it relates to that. We talked about housing legislation and the need for more flexibility, which would allow us to build more units, and counter-cyclical, very key to us. And the senator also is developing some legislation and options as it relates to economic development. So what we in effect went over was not that I briefed him on the city, because he knows the city backwards and forwards, has been one of the architects of our restoration and our rehabilitation and our coming through from 75 on. This was his telling us what's ahead in the Congress and finding out what our priorities would be. Senator?
Thank you, Ed. Thank you very much. We were very courteously received by the mayor and his associates, and it was very, very informative as far as I'm concerned. The mayor has correctly stated the priorities, and I believe that it is my responsibility to follow through on those priorities so long as I'm in the Senate of the United States. The reason that these priorities are vital is that we will be adopting in November, December, what's called the second budget resolution for fiscal year 1981, which began October 1, 1980. And it is this resolution which will determine priorities, proportions of appropriation, and which can determine whether or not we will be successful in respect of the three top priorities, especially the Medicaid priority, which the mayor has described. I'm with Senator Moynihan on the Medicaid bill, and it was a very important decision to me as to whether New York City felt that we should press both for Medicaid and welfare reform, or whether we are better off pressing for Medicaid reform and countercyclical assistance. And I think the mayor's decisions are the right ones, and we will propose to follow through. Now, there are two other things to be mentioned. One is that youth employment is a critical matter with us. We've got, in many areas of New York City, probably 40% to 60% unemployed youth. And in many cases, it is tragic for us to realize that these kids who are snatching gold chains off ladies' necks are there because they got nothing else to do, and hence they're up to no good. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be absolutely condign about punishment, as the mayor has properly said. And certainly we owe that at the very least to the very tough job the police have to do. But at the same time, we don't have to increase the caseload by having such an unbelievable unemployment. Therefore, I have my own youth measure. The president has a youth measure. There is in the pipeline now some money which comes out of the Youth Demonstration Projects law, which Humphrey and I sponsor. Also in the latest education bill and in the latest CETA bill, we have youth programs. All of these are extremely helpful to New York. But the big program coming down the pike on youth is a $3 billion bill, which will bring New York City a couple of hundred million a year and really make a noticeable change in its ability to deal with youth, remembering that we've cut the heart out of CETA jobs, that we've cut very seriously summer jobs, and hence that our opportunities are less unless we get it in some other way. Also, this takes recognition of the fact that while, as who knows better than Ed Koch, having been in the House, it is very difficult to change formulae for the distribution of the federal aid frontally. The only way you can do it effectively is to work around them. And that's what we did with concentrations of poor kids in respect of the elementary and secondary education bill. And that's what we have to do in the youth field, to find other programs which make up for those of which we've been deprived, and which are conditioned to areas with very grave problems, like New York City. One last thing, and then I'm through. Also, I suggested to the mayor the inquiry into a measure which Senator McGovern and I have pending, called the Neighborhood Conservation Act, which proposes to establish a bank, a federal bank, to bank paper issued by municipalities for the purpose of dealing with its infrastructure, that is, streets, conduits, are bridges and similar structures, which are very, very seriously in decay, and so much so as to be of great jeopardy to the people of this and other cities comparably situated. Again, I wish to thank the mayor. I brought with me, as a personal associate, John Trubin, a first-rate lawyer in New York, and two of my Washington staff, Greg Jones, who was my counsel, and Jim O'Connell, who was my chief legislative aide. And we also found the mayor's people to be extremely informative, extremely cooperative, and I've enjoyed the visit very much.
We'll take questions.
Mayor Koch, I think it was a week or so ago you were holding a news conference and the subject of the senatorial race came up. You said that you thought that Jacob Javits was the best senator New York had ever had, and you're supporting his opponent.
Well, I want to amend that. He's one of the best because Bob Wagner's grandfather was one of the great senators, too. So. And Senator Lehman was good, but he's certainly at the very top. None surpasses him, but there may be two or three that were like Bob Wagner and Senator Lehman.
Yet you're supporting his opponent, right? I mean, did it ever come up in your luncheon conversation that maybe you might change your mind?
No. Let me just say that whenever you have a general election and you have two parties and the mayor is the titular head of the party in the city, there's an obligation of party, which I will always carry out. But I have said from the very beginning that I will never denigrate the senator's glorious 24 years of service to this country. I believe he has had a wonderful career and has served the state very well. There are party obligations, which he understands, and I don't flinch from them, but I don't think that simply because you carry out your party obligations that you should seek to knock somebody who's not knockable. Let me just tell you that this state is far better off having had him for the last six years than Ramsey Clark. Ramsey Clark, who is pro-Ayatollah and pro-Arafat and PLO. I mean, you remember that?
I think I'm very proud of my friendship with and my association with the mayor. We have opposed each other on previous occasions and debated with each other about candidates of one kind or another, and he is entirely right. It's his responsibility to his party as it is to mine, and I think that it's a great tribute to him, and it's why he's so very popular in this city. That he has the perspective to see the difference between a devotion to the two-party system and what it calls from individuals who serve in it, and a personal appraisal as a citizen of the worth of another public servant. And I don't think anybody will be confused as to the mayor's sincerity in endorsing a candidate for the Senate, which is not me, and at the same time, his having a high opinion of me. I'm not a bit confused.
Senator, do you get any sense from all mayors that use the comments about you over the last few weeks that has helped you?
That is rich.
Has mayor's comments about you, do you get a sense that they help you?
I think the mayor could have hurt me by speaking badly of my cooperation.
If I had done that, I wouldn't be telling the truth.
In my work in cooperation with the city, but he's called it as he saw it, and I'm grateful to him, and frankly I think it's helped him in the sense that it's confirmed the feeling that you get plain talk and the truth from Ed Koch.